From the high plains of West Texas, it is the Cellar Reserve Wine Show.
Well, okay, so think about it like years ago. Like, it was pretty much like, you know, one or two art places, like one food truck. And like, down at the Luca last night, there was easily 20 food trucks, like two bands, you know, just like alcohol all over the place, art all over the place. It's just kind of grown up, and it's cool, but like, yeah, nobody was like buying anything. I mean, somebody had a picture of like, you know, the Big Boy Pizza place and stuff like that. Like somebody had a painting of one of those those like statues, and was on sale for like $21,000.
That's crazy. Like,
it's not worth it, essentially. So
you used to be able to get stuff for almost nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, no, but now that's the class of buyer, I guess, that's going to Art Trail, you know. But, you know, there was probably 20,000 people for the Carol of Lights, probably about, you know, 1,000 people doing Art Trail. So, you know, it seems like Lubbock was out in force last night. So that was kind of cool.
It is cool to see that how much Lubbock has grown up. Like, every time I go there, I'm just amazed. And especially First Friday Art Trail, that I think when I first started going, it was probably 2 years after it started. But all the places, you could walk in and know almost everybody in each room, because it would just be generally that same class, the same group that's either out in general, or you just had the young networking connections. Now, I couldn't imagine I'd go back and probably know 10 people.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely blown up for... I mentioned some of the artists who price their stuff correctly. It's definitely worthwhile and everything, but yeah, for most everybody, it's just kind of like, wow, okay, you want that much money for that little small, like 4x4 painting of you contemplating life? No thanks. I'm good.
Well, I guess at $21,000, you only need to sell one piece of art, and you're good for the year as a starving artist in Lubbock.
Well, I mean, probably... Okay, so it was... I want to say it was like 48 by 36 in terms of inches and stuff like that. So the canvas maybe cost $200 at most. The paint, maybe $20 at most. So yeah, you're definitely making a ton of money if you sell that one piece. So...
Well, I think for local artists, for the most part, I thought Baron Batch kind of set the pricing structure for known local artists, because he had the recognition from Texas Tech, and he had a whole group of boosters that would buy art. And I think his average for about $350, $450, and at the time, just graduating from college, I'm like, that's crazy. And then you go into... whether it's at the First Friday Art Trail or you go into any art gallery and you're like, oh, $450 is kind of low for what all these other people are charging. But that's kind of my basis for it. And since then, I've just started collecting art. You know what's insane? Have you ever gotten something framed?
Yeah. Framing is really expensive for just prints and stuff. So
yeah, they had a 75% off sale. This is my only Black Friday event that I went to. It was at Michael's for 75% off of framing. And I was thinking maybe I'd spend $20 a frame, $30 a frame. It was a 2x3 canvas. That thing cost like $98 to get framed.
Ooh, damn. That's fun.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine people paying full price for framing. If that's 75% off, you're telling me people are going to pay $48. Like, you're paying $400 for a frame. Your painting has to be worth at least $1,000 to really justify that, to protect it, no?
You know, honestly, it seems to me, even looking like last night at like prints versus the framed art and stuff like that, it seems like the ones with the frames were way better buys and stuff, because it'd be like, oh, here's a frame, you know, and it's $500, like, frame included. And I'm like, okay, that's not that bad considering how some of the non-framed art was, you know, like $400 by itself. You know, just like a print on the wall hung up with, you know, like paper clips and like ticky tack and stuff like that. So,
I'm surprised there's not more people who go to art school just to frame. Get all the connections of the people who are artists and just say, I will be the frame person. And you could probably pay for your way through school by saying, let's make a deal, and I get this part of it. But the value will automatically be increased when they see it's already framed.
Yeah, exactly.
Because even I got the newsprint for the Houston Astros winning the championship, the one with Altuve and Springer on the cover with the World Series trophy, which by far is the best championship trophy in pro sports. Stanley Cup is awesome because it has layers, but the fact that they have the flags representing all the other teams is pretty awesome. But to get that frame, the paper cost me $3. The framing, Michaels won it $140, but they would sell me a pre-framed one for $110.
Oh. Well, that's one way to make money. Hey, live in America, land of capitalism, so whatever.
Yeah, that being said, if you need an extra newspaper, I think I have one then, because I just went and bought the pre-framed one.
Yeah, I mean, you save money that way, and you still have the newspaper, right?
Yeah, I still have the newspaper, even though I never sell any of these newspapers, because I have a collection of them. Whether it's, I still have the Astros when they won the NL pennant, I have when Columbia broke apart over Houston, Nacogdoches area, and I have a couple other ones, like Bobby Knight, that 808 or 880 achievement at Texas Tech. I have a bunch of those. Mm-hmm. Christopher is probably going to look at them when he's 16 and be like, they don't even have the newspaper industry anymore, Dad. Why would you have this?
Well, at that point, they might be worth something, though. So
you're right. They might be worth something. But really, the intention of keeping them was maybe one day my kids would like this stuff, that he'll take it to school. But then I realized no kid will care who Bobby Knight is. But the NASA one might work, and then the NL championship might be interesting if we're still in Houston.
Yeah, at that point, it might be better to like, Spider-Man opens number one in the box office, like, save that newspaper, and just, like, keep that on the top, and that way he actually, like, oh, okay, this is cool, let me look through the rest of them, you know?
Ah, well played. That's a strategy there. I'm going to go ahead and pull that one off. And so, thanks for the idea, man. But
Yeah, it's fair.
We've been on the air for 5 minutes now, and we would like to welcome everybody back to Free Drinks next week, the first episode recorded in 2 years now. I say that with a wane in my voice, because it's been a long while. After everybody's been moving around, busy with schedules, I'm happy to be back on air and recording, and hopefully we can make this a regular event. Mike and I are here today. Cassie and Christy are not. Christy is having another event, and Cassie's not feeling very well. But we might have a special guest intermittently join us, which is my son Christopher. You will hear him in the background if he comes in. But outside of that, it will be the two of us. We have a couple of topics to cover today, including Texas Tech news, Texas news, U.S. news, and, of course, what we're drinking and what we've been drinking. So to start it off...
Hey, Harry, old buddy, old pal!
Yeah?
Will you join me in a good luck toast before you head out?
Oh, sure thing. Whatever you think will help your chances.
Sorry.
Any interesting drinks or recent alcohol purchases in the last month, 2 years and a half-ish?
Well, I'm going to just go with the recent ones. Of course, being here in Lubbock and kind of keeping it relatively local, last bottle of champagne was the Gruet Rosé. You know, freaking amazing. I'm going to say champagne style champagne made in New Mexico. So really cool. Really good. And then I'm not going to stick it to one bottle, but I'm going to leave it with this six-pack I bought last at Specs. Went to Missouri for the Eclipse a couple months back. Stumbled upon America's sixth largest craft brewery, which is Boulevard Brewing, and completely fell in love with their entire range of products, including, amazingly enough, a pale ale. So, been drinking that when I can find it, but mostly been drinking their unfiltered wheat, which is pretty good. So,
all right. Well, you really set the bar fairly high with going through multiple of them. So I'll go through wine, beer, and liquor as well. For a wine, I've been this year primarily, my favorite bottle has been the Clos Duval Cabernet 2012. We've had two bottles of that. That's really been enjoyable. And for everybody listening, yes, there's Clos Dubois that you could find at Walmart. Clos Duval, you'll probably have to go to a wine store or somewhere outside of Walmart. They probably have it at a Kroger's, United, but you're traditionally not going to get into your regular box stores. Really rich, and it's just the finish is fantastic on it. And it pairs with anything, or it pairs with nothing, if that makes sense at all. It's a perfect bottle in the holiday time if you're looking for to buy someone special that special bottle, and you're looking in the $40 to $60 range, you should look at that. For beer, surprisingly, I was recommended by one of my close friends, Joey, to try the Budweiser Prohibition style beer. It's a six pack that came out in the last 2 months. Really good. It's an amber lager, and it actually tastes like amber lager and not Budweiser. I would recommend that if you could find it in your stores. Priced really well and a rich drink. And for liquor, my favorite one this year has been the Jefferson C8. And it's a aged whiskey that goes around. They age it for the 3 years in, or it's an aged bourbon. They age it for 3 years in Kentucky. Then they put it on a ship. The ship goes to 8 different ports around the world in the Atlantic Ocean. When it returns is when they bottle it. By being there, normally that what you lose in the storehouse, the angel share, just goes away, and you just get more alcohol back into it. You get the taste of the wood and the bourbon house and the smell. Well, this one, since it's been at sea, you get a lot of that sea flavor, so more of the toffee and a little saltiness, caramel touch to it. Really good recommendation if you're looking to switch up your bourbon taste for the holidays.
Bourbon, it's kind of coming along. It seems like more and more people are making bourbon and more people are drinking bourbon these days.
Yeah, I think I'm completely a bourbon head. I still have all these bottles from when I used to work in Lubbock as a distribution rep, and all I still buy is bourbon, and I just keep trying them. I went to Cleveland this year because I work in Cleveland for part of the year, and there's this bar, it's called The Vault. It's at the bottom of a hotel / residence building, and back in our pre-prohibition era, of course, during the robber barons, that's where a lot of the robber barons lived. It wasn't New York, it was out in Cleveland. They left because they tried to tax them extra and move to New York, which is ironic as New York has some of the highest taxes now, so it'd probably been the opposite. But they built these vaults particularly for the barons, so you had like the Vanderbilts, and they had a vault that's probably, I would say, 20 yards by 10 yards, just to store their stuff. And then right next to it, you have another robber baron who has one the same size. So they converted this to a whiskey house, and they just have fine whiskeys. They make custom cocktails to where it's worth the $12 because they're chipping off the block. They really have knowledge of the entire beverage. But Daddy, up there... And I was able to try a lot of different ones when I was there, and came across Nikki Coffee, which is a Japanese bourbon, as well as fell in love with Blanton's again. But there's all these hidden gems around the U.S. just to go to the point. that bourbon's really taken off again and taken over America.
Well, that's a good thing. It's definitely one of those like American style liquors, you know. So it's just
go
it's
sit
cool.
Over there.
It's kind of a I'm not gonna say a renaissance, there. But it's definitely that time of the I'm gonna say alcohol making industry that a lot of old stuff is new and a lot of new stuff is kind of old and stuff like that. And the new stuff is new too. I think I read a stat recently. Everything that like. America's, like, in terms of breweries, America's finally hitting the number here recently that they had before Prohibition. Like, you know, and it's just kind of, it's like, in terms of just beer, it's finally getting up there. Liquor is still lagging a little bit behind. The wine industry is definitely way ahead of what it was in terms of wineries. But it's, you know, it's kind of like for America's drinks, since Americans, most Americans still consume beer as a majority, you know, beer is finally getting back up there. Liquor is slowly creeping back up to what it was before Prohibition. So, I mean, hey, that just goes to show how dangerous and kind of damaging Prohibition was. You know, it was didn't last very long, but it definitely set America's alcohol industry back, you know, like 100 years plus. So,
sorry, you have to mute it while my son's still singing toddler songs. But as part of that, what's mind-blowing about that stat that you bring up is that we're just now getting back to, I guess, distilleries and breweries that existed before Prohibition. And I'm just guesstimating here. I'm not looking at any stats in front of me. But I would have to assume since Prohibition, the American population has doubled. So the fact that we're just now getting to that just tells you how much more room the industries have to go and how much they used to drink back then.
Yeah, water wasn't consumed as much back 100 years ago. It was a lot of beer, and hey, beer was healthy for you. I mean, compared to non-filtered water, which is what most of your water was back then. You know, it would be like river water or it would be well water. And, you know, of course, nothing wrong with well water. A lot of people around Lubbock drink well water. But it's one of those things that, hey, still, you know, you're getting what the ground put in it, not, you know, not necessarily the nice, safe bottle of Dasani that most of us are used to.
You do make a point. Water will give you typhoid. Beer will just give you a hangover. Which maybe that's why Westerns, everybody was so grumpy. They were just too drunk.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, they were eating a lot of beans and chili, too. So, you know, that's all good food for absorbing some of the excess alcohol in your system.
Very true. And speaking of bourbon, this is the last day. If you're next to a Goody Goodies or you have a Goody Goodies in your area, get a membership. This is the last day where you could be entered into a raffle to be selected or given the opportunity to buy the rare whiskeys of the world. So whether that's the Van Winkle or the 17-year Eagle Rare or the JT Stag Single Barrels, this is that time of year where they're making it available. Just wanted to put that out there so everybody is aware who's listening to this, all three of you.
No, the audience, all dozens of them, definitely needs as much alcohol buying discounts as they can possibly get a hold of. So,
well, I'm not indicating this is any discounts. It's just that it's so hard to get some of these bottles. This is just an opportunity to pay full price for the bottle.
Hey, all according, like, I think the American dream is all opportunity. So if you're given an opportunity, that's pretty much all you need.
You're very true. Very true. In good articles, AC/DC just launched a new bourbon and cola drink, Let There Be Rock, fund for Australian musicians. Once again, Australia gets all this cool stuff.
Yeah, they, you know, for those about to rock, I salute you. That's all I got.
And so do you have any other plans or planned destination distilleries, breweries, wineries in the next couple of months that you're looking forward to?
I hate to say it this way, but I would love to go back to Missouri just because Boulevard is not widely distributed, and because it's a beer, and of course we have lectured long and long in lots on various kind of dumb alcohol laws, but apparently I can't get beer shipped across state lines. So that leaves it up to the three-tier system, and that's pretty much at the mercy of, you know, whatever the buyers want to bring in. So I'd love to go back to Missouri just to bring that in. But now I've been to the sixth largest, so I need to crack down the top five largest craft breweries in America just so I can go to them and say, hey, I've been to the sixth largest craft breweries in America.
Have you considered riding Bourbon or riding Boulevard to see who distributes it or if they have a distribution deal in the works for Texas?
I did. They are distributed, but it's not like their whole line. They produce like 30 different beers, and they distribute about 12 of them, only one of which is available in Lubbock right now. But in Houston, for instance, they've got six beers in distribution. Of course, me being me, the one that I like the most, which was their Hefeweizen, is not distributed. So it's one of those, you have to buy it at the winery, or you're kind of SOL.
Good. I would say, I had the same issue with trying to get a tequila. Surprisingly, living in Texas, so close to the Mexican border, there are still tequilas that aren't available to Texans up until 3 months ago. One of these tequilas I found, it's called Momoto, is the restaurant in Cleveland. It's a Lucha Libre-inspired Mexican restaurant, and not Tex-Mex, so there's not cheese on anything. If there is cheese, it's that white crumbly cheese that you actually get from the taqueria. But there we tried this fantastic tequila called Suavecito. It has some blue agave nectar in it to smooth it out, and you eat it with an orange and cinnamon, which is the first time I've been introduced to that manner of pairing a fruit with it instead of the salt and the lime.
And the cinnamon, that sounds really interesting.
The orange and the cinnamon is fantastic. If you haven't tried it, go buy it now. Try it with any tequila. It will make it better. And now, when I was up there, I used to go up, bring back a bottle every time because it wasn't available here nor California. I eventually wrote the marketing manager of the company, and they, less than 6 weeks later, by pure coincidence, I'm sure me writing them didn't cause this, they let me know that we have a distribution deal. It could be found at Twin Liquors. So the first time I was able to buy it in Texas was on the way to a bachelor party for one of our mutual close friends who just got married. And we knocked out, I think, two bottles while we were there. And so I think everybody else enjoyed it as well. And if you're near Twin Liquors, try Suavecito. You will not regret it. You can thank me later. And the best way of thanking me is to tell other people, because people need to drink better tequila.
Yeah, I think most of us are used to Jose Cuervo, which, you know, has its uses and definitely is a great well tequila, but there's way better ones out there. Obviously, we are most closely associated with Patron because of certain associations of ours and their love of Patron. But definitely, you know, there's some tequilas that I've tried that are just completely smooth. It's almost like drinking like water as far as like the effect it had, like that non-puckering effect it has, as I'll say, and stuff like that. But are definitely just amazing. So I've still got this 25-year aged bottle of rum that I bought in Costa Rica last year, unopened. I'm waiting for the opportunity, you know. I think as soon as I find like the best bottle of eggnog, like I'll make a little bit of rum and eggnog or something like that. So
as a rule, the only time I drink tequila that's owned by Hair Brands, Paul Mitchell, which actually owns Patron Tequila, is when we are together as a college group with our one friend who tends to only drink Patron. And I really try to avoid Jose Cuervo, as it's not pure tequila. But on the rum and eggnog mix, that's a highlight of the winter time as well. If you haven't tried it, try sake and eggnog. It surprisingly goes great together.
one of our favorite names, one of the most inappropriate names for a drink, Nagasake Bomb, but one of our favorites to order, just because it is it's a hoot and a holler.
Yes, it's
for sure.
Horribly offensive, I admit it, but delicious. And we did not coin the term or the name. I actually found out about it on another podcast, TBWT. But it's fantastic. So try a couple of those at the holidays coming, especially if y'all have any time off out there in the listening world.
Now, I know for sure that we've come up with our fair share of inappropriate shot names. The Lubbock Love Knife being one of them.
I will say, wasn't the Love Knife a second name?
That was the second. I think the Lubbock Executioner was the
first
one.
So deeply inappropriate. We'll just blame that on a misspent youth in mid-20s.
You know, I'm going to say on that note that it's impossible to find hot damn these days. Goldschlager and Rumpel, like Rumpel's coming back like as a shot by itself and everything. Goldschlager, of course, Goldschlager, but hot damn, man, it's like nearly impossible to find that liquor.
So what replaced hot damn? Was it Jack Daniel's Fire, or what's the other one? Fireball? Is that what replaced hot damn?
Yep.
Okay. And so, I definitely see that. Oh, one thing I did see, I'm not sure if this is in Lubbock yet, but you know those big box wines, the traditional ones that they've always had, like Vela? You can now buy 5 liters of Fireball in the slap bag pouch.
Man, that brings new meaning to slap the bag. You know,
slap the bag, and there is going to be some poor fraternity, I guess, pledgee that's going to be the victim of something very sad involving slap the bag and that much whiskey in one bag.
Mm-mm.
And so,
yeah, that's definitely that's a little dangerous. It sounds like, but you know, I guess if you need it for mixers and stuff like that, hey, it's helping the what do you say, like the bar catering industry, like just being able to buy it in a larger format for presumably less money.
It you're right. It sounds horribly irresponsible, and maybe that was the intention. It's really for bars who are going through an extreme amount, and it limits the cost of shipping glass bottles if you could put it in a box. But I did
put it into plastic. Yeah.
I did find the Brewers Association top 10 list for 2015, so it is dated by 2 years, of the top 10 breweries. For some reason, they did leave off Boulevard, so this definitely dated, and there's some that I've never heard of. So the number one, of course, is Pennsylvania's Yuengling and Sons. And I think everybody assumes that one. The second is Boston Beer, who is Sam Adams. Third is Sierra Nevada Brewery, who is out of California. New Belgium in Colorado with Flat Tire. Have you ever heard of Gambrinus out of Texas?
No, I've never heard of them. What do they produce?
I'm actually looking that up. So I'm going to go to the Grupo Modelo and Moosehead Beers. Oh, okay. My fault.
Okay.
So
Grupo Modelo, like that's like Corona and stuff. I mean,
yeah. Okay. So I was reading it wrong. They import Grupo Modelo and Moosehead Beers, who I've never heard of.
Oh, okay.
But they are the parent company of Spotsil Brewery, who is Shiner.
Oh, okay.
So it's really Shiner. That's why it threw me off. Legantes Brewery in California, Bell's Brewery in Michigan. I don't believe that. Deschutes in Oregon, Minas Craft Brewery in Wisconsin, and Stone Brewing in California. So there's obviously been a lot of change in the industry since 2015, a lot of consolidation and purchasing as well. So I'm not sure how valid that list truly is.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Minas Craft Brewery is a small distillery in Wisconsin that they're also a pizza restaurant.
You know, it's kind of pizza is one of those things that it's relatively easy to do but hard to perfect and everything. And so, like, even kind of looking into the pricing of, like, just buying a pizza oven and, like, ingredients and stuff, it's pretty inexpensive. And so it makes sense to do pizza. Like, pizza and beer is, like, that's a classic combination.
Especially, you know? If people are too drunk, they don't care what the pizza tastes like.
Yeah, I mean, even if you put an anchovy, like, right in the middle of it, most of them won't even notice.
And I'm not saying that I have experienced or worked for an organization that possibly laundered money through their pizza company, but I distinctly remember having one owner or a relationship with two owners that have been possibly involved in that industry. And the money we made never showed up in the bank, I would say. Or it would just get taken out in the middle of the day by the owner. So I feel what I'm trying to say is not only is it good for, because it's cheap and easy to make, it's cheap to start. Quality control doesn't really need to be there as long as you have a good base sauce for it. But it's also easy to launder money.
Yeah, and just for any federal authorities listening to this podcast, we have no knowledge that would benefit any kind of cases. Just saying. So
yeah, just say, this was all a hypothetical discussion.
Yeah. and plus it was way back in the day anyways. So we were, not not as knowledgeable as we probably would have been back then.
Yes,
so.
And once again, hypothetically, the employees were not participating in this. It was ownership that was hypothetically participating and maybe breaking tax laws.
Yeah. I mean, technically, if it doesn't show up in the bank, it's a lot harder to track, I imagine. So.
Yeah, it doesn't show up in the bank, and you're working off paper receipts. Now I imagine with these digital devices, like you have that Square machine that everybody has now, they just have it on their iPad at the restaurants, and everything's digitized. It's a lot harder to watch that since it uploads automatically in a database, and they can't forge anything or make up fake anything.
You know, honestly, Square's really, like, it's not, what would you say, specific to different industries and everything, like, say, for instance, the wine tasting room industry. But it's a really good, really robust system that, honestly, if I was starting a new business, I probably would just get a Square initially because there's no fees to do it, and they give you some of the machines for free anyways, like some of the readers and everything like that. So
I'm more disappointed, but I almost get angry, especially when artisans are small businesses don't have Square as an option, that we only accept cash because we can't have the 2% taken out, then you don't want my business because this is no longer a cash society. And Square is so simple, and you don't have to have a contract. I don't see why businesses don't do it.
I mean, so 3.5% is what I think they take out on all credit card transactions and everything. But if, like, you work through, like, an actual, how should I say it, like, credit card processing agency, 3.5% is, like, what they take out for every single American Express anyways. And that's, like, one of the best deals and stuff. And so, it, like, it not being based on volume is maybe troublesome to, like, you're a huge business, like, doing, you know, millions of dollars worth of sales. But then again, if you're just a little small, you know, like you said, artist who's selling one or two, you know, 10 paintings a year and stuff like that, like, yeah, it's like, yeah, you obviously just don't care about making money at that point because that's, you know, just that's what you need to do. You need to be able to accept credit cards these days. And especially, like, if that artist last night, like, oh, I'm sorry, like, I only take cash for $21,000. I'd be like, well, you just don't want to be great, do you?
You really don't want my money. And now I feel like you're doing something illegal. And where I feel like this is the clearest sign of becoming an old man, I suspect everything being a front or something illegal now. I'm just like, there's not enough people there, and this has lasted more than 2 years. How? houseway. But that's it. It's just interesting, and I guess that's perspective changing as I'm getting older and going forward. So,
And you work in the insurance industry, so now all you're thinking about is, okay, what's my liability on this?
Exactly. Also, what's the liability and how much that costs? Where I was watching Home Alone with Christopher. That's one of his favorite movies now. His top four movies for a kid is Home Alone, Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Avatar, and Elf. And I think I forced Elf upon him because it's Christmas time. In Home Alone, the whole time watching the movie, my dad's in insurance as well. I'd never thought of this until my perspective changed is, I'm not sure insurance would cover the destruction caused by Kevin in that house. Because
he's doing it to himself.
Yes, it was all caused by a resident of the house. Like, sure, the criminals were breaking in, but the criminals, they broke the door downstairs. I don't think they broke anything else outside of some Christmas ornaments, and that doesn't meet your deductible. But the tar on the basement stairs going downstairs, the roofing piece with the nail going through it, the paint cans hanging from the banister, which would cause a weight and shift and scar on the banisters, the heated up doorknobs that would naturally discolor, the windows that broke as people falling out, the treehouse that Kevin did his little the rope through and kicked off the other side of it. I'm not sure insurance would pay for any of that since it was Kevin's fault and his irresponsible parents.
So speaking of other Christmas movies, though, like what, Die Hard? Do you think insurance covered all of that? In that movie, all the damage and destruction to that building? Nakatomi?
I do think damage and destruction is covered by that because all of them were outside parties. They weren't internal parties. The officer who was involved comes from a different department across the U.S., and law enforcement's not going to take liability for that. The criminals, they didn't work for the company. They were outside actors. So the damage is as a result of negligence or purposeful destruction. So as long as Nakatomi Tower is willing to press charges against the families or the policies of those individuals that caused the damage, then the insurance company would naturally reimburse Nakatomi for the damage and subrogate what they can for the remaining people that are alive, excluding Bruce Willis.
I mean, I'm just kind of wondering, like, what was the hospital payout to Bruce Willis because of, bloody feet, shot up, carved up body and stuff like that. So,
well, off of Nakatomi, there would not be a payout off of their insurer. He would have to pay that with his own insurance company, and it would have to go through health insurance. Yes, that would go through his health insurance policy. But the fact that he bled all over the building, I can't imagine the mitigation cleanup factor probably costs more than replacing most of the windows of that place, just with the sheer amount of blood and bodily fluids. Like, the entire vent system in the building probably had to be disinfected at the end, just due to bodily fluids being in there. You're not sure if there's anything contagious.
But yeah, I mean, you never know. That character could have had AIDS the entire time.
But I do appreciate you acknowledging that that is one of the greatest American Christmas movies of all time.
Well, it's definitely... That's the discussion, right? It takes place at Christmas, and so that makes it, in my view, a Christmas movie. I don't know. Does it... I think the greatest Christmas movie right now, and I share this this opinion with Christy, is Love Actually, in terms of a movie that, like, everybody watches at some point during the month of Christmas. But Home Alone and Die Hard, they're both up there. you know, along with some of the classics, of course, like, you know, the Scrooge tales and things like that.
Okay. I've never seen Love Actually. Actually, though, I did just read an article about it, I think. But my top five Christmas movies, Die Hard, Elf, of course, The Grinch, but the animated version, not that live-action Jim Carrey version. A new one that I started last year that's moved into the rotation, Uncle Nick, which I found on Netflix. And what would be the other one? Home Alone. But I recommend Uncle Nick to everyone, especially if you're a baseball fan, because the story is told from the 1978 baseball riots that took place in Cleveland. It was an Indians versus Ranger game that took place after they had 1 cent beer nights, and the game couldn't be finished due to a riot in the stadium from the fans. And it's a story reflecting of a Christmas story of a family that came together, and it kind of goes along that same timeline as the baseball game. But it should come back on Netflix this year. It's a definite recommend to watch, and that'll be in my rotation. In fact, I'll probably watch it this evening.
Huh. Well, I think for sure, let's see, top five. Home Alone's good. Die Hard's good. Love Actually. A Christmas Story. Definitely got to watch that every year. In there. In fact, I think NBC is coming out with a live version of it. That's, you know, it's coming on sometime, essentially. But, and then not a Christmas movie per se, but I always, like most Christmas days and everything, watch one of the Star Wars films. So, just because. I can, and I'm red-blooded American and like my Star Wars, so.
Does it have to be one of the original three, or can it be any of the Star Wars?
Well, last year I did a marathon where I went, woke up at like 5 a.m. and watched the first three, and then I went and watched Rogue One in theaters, came back home and watched the original three, like 4, 5, and 6, and then watch the seventh one. So started at 5 and finished at like 11:30 that night. So
that is extreme, but that's kind of awesome. I'll admit, growing up, I wasn't a huge fan of Star Wars. Of course, Darth Vader was always kind of a cool character, just being half cyborg. But I'm not even sure if you could call this a trilogy, since there's the story, then there's the offshoot stories of what were in those yellow pre-credit story modes, where Rogue One is how they got all that information to attack the Star War, or attack the Death Star. And that's the stuff I always wanted, is what was in that scrolling intro of every movie, is tell me that story. And they're finally doing it. So I'm not sure if I should consider that part of a new trilogy, or are these just a continuation of the universe. Regardless, I love the continuation of the universe.
Yeah, I know Rogue One is definitely, it's not going to be a trilogy, it's not going to be anything more, essentially, but what they are, yeah, they're doing, it's like, I can't remember what they're calling it, but it's like legacy stories or something like that, where they're just going to tell other stories set in the universe. Like the next one coming out is that Han Solo movie and everything. And then after that is supposedly Boba Fett, and then actually they did just announce that after this trilogy is done, they're coming up with like a completely new like time frame and like and story and stuff like that. Like that they're just gonna kind of not reboot and everything, but they're just gonna do something completely different.
I like so, that they're not kind of that they're not rebooting. That they're just gonna keep the story going, so you can kind of pick it up from anywhere. And that they're just different aspects of it. Because everybody that I've met that's read the books indicate the books are so rich. And I've read about half of the Darth Vader comics and realize we need more Darth Vader in our life. Because everything that happened from episode 4, 5, and 6 and 1, 2, and 3, that whole between time, the Clone Wars, that Darth Vader story is amazing.
Well, and I think many people would agree that that part of that was one of the best parts of Rogue One was Darth Vader unleashed, essentially. Like, oh, this is why he's the most feared being in the universe, because he literally, you know, just walks down a darkened corridor, massacring red shirts and peons and everything. So it was kind of sad for them, but, you know, I definitely think when they pass that data drive through the door and then you see the lightsaber come through, like, yeah, that guy didn't survive. So.
And so what else have you been watching outside of Star Wars? I know you're probably excited about Star Wars being released. Is it Christmas Day this year, or is it going to be a little before Christmas?
It's December 15th. I already got my tickets for that one, but definitely this has been, you know, I want to say that, you know, since Netflix came out, obviously Netflix started as kind of like a, oh, you know, order any movie, watch TV shows, that kind of thing. But what it's become, like this content generation engine, you know, this year, Ozark, watched that. That was really good. But what's on my queue right now to watch is The Crown, Godless, just finished Punisher, and that was amazing. There's just, you know, there's just so much, I'm going to say, out there and everything. And obviously, you know, you still got your main cable networks and stuff like FX and Fox and Comedy Central and HBO. But, I mean, you know, it's just, it seems like with everything that's coming to Netflix and now that you can get HBO independently of having a cable box, you know, it's just, there's just a lot. There is a lot to watch, so.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, it almost makes you think that was this the plan all along for Netflix to become a content generation source, or did it just develop to that as cable started tearing apart and there's been more or better cable channels than live TV? So what I have watched this year and really enjoyed, I will continue. I think FX as a network is one of the best cable networks in existence. And whether you start going from The Shield and moving up, I recently watched, what was the show after The Shield? Justified. Fantastic, especially if you like old westerns, but basically takes place in the modern time about a U.S. Marshal. That was absolutely amazing. Snowfall came out this year, which was amazing, kind of the start of the crack epidemic in southern L.A., and just around the whole story from how the Iranian-Contras affected the crack and how crack developed from just being cocaine distribution. I also recently, I did finish Punisher, which is absolutely brutal, but one of the, is now the best storytelling I've seen Marvel do. Because when I first heard that it was coming out, I was like, how can I watch a guy who's just a sadistic, murderous movie that I'll get sick of this? But the storyline, the use of no other superheroes in it, fantastic. If you haven't watched it, one, watch it, but you're going to want to keep your kids away from watching it because it's absolutely brutal. And I don't think I've ever jumped so much or felt the emotion of a character as I did, especially in the scenes that involve his family.
Yeah, definitely, you know, some of that imagery, let's put it that way, was unsettling for sure. And so that was one of those things that, you know, I don't think I can rewatch that series. But it was a very good representation of, like, oh, this is, you know, kind of what they're going through, right? So
yeah,
that was definitely good.
It actually makes me want to reach out to all my friends that are went to the Marines or still in the Marines, just to let them know that there's other people out here who will be happy to help. Because, yeah, it was breathtaking. And then movie-wise, Thor, I watched that and was pleasantly surprised. Wasn't expecting Thor to be funny. And hopefully we get that means down the road we'll get Planet Hulk, which Thor almost was, but really wasn't because he didn't have his family or other Hulks, but it was close to Planet Hulk. And I'm also interested to see how that's going to play into the new Avengers with the sister being Death, or the God of Death, and then Thanos having an affair with Death. Is that just going to be words, or is that synergy that's going to eventually happen? And not reading Thor comics growing up, I never knew the Queen of Hela was that badass, because she was an amazing villain.
Yeah, she definitely, obviously, I think anytime you get an Oscar-winning actress into a role like that, you know, you're hopefully in for something good. But yeah, she did a great job at that. Definitely one of the, I guess, I'm not going to say the funniest, but one of the funniest Marvel movies and everything that I've seen. And I definitely, I mean, going into, of course, we've got Black Panther coming out in February, and so that's kind of the last one before the next Avengers movie. You know, with Black Panther coming out, obviously there's going to be some more story development, you know, towards, you know, oh, hey, where are these, you know, where are these stones at, things like that. And I'm guessing, and I've heard that it's going to lead directly into, like, the attack and stuff like that on the planet Earth by Thanos. But, I mean, seriously, just having, you know, all of these characters come together, you know, it looks like, obviously the trailer launched, and by the way, the trailer set a record for 200 and something million views in a single day, like the most viewed YouTube video ever, and everything in terms of day one. And so it's just very exciting. It's a good time to be a geek, of course, with, you got Star Wars, you got Marvel, a little bit of Justice League. Not that that was an Oscar-winning movie by any means, but you know, it's you know, everybody's got to start somewhere. So,
one thing that that stood out, and I know I'm probably reaching here because we would have already heard of it if it exists, is that Avengers logo looks mighty close to the Fantastic Four logo. Is there any chance that Fox could come to an agreement with Marvel Studios to let Doom come over and fight with Strange, or add the Fantastic Four into it?
So, interesting that you brought that up, because it's in the, I'm not even going to say it's in the works, but Disney is currently negotiating with, I can't even remember the name of the guy who owns it and everything, like the Rupert Murdoch, yeah, who owns all the Fox holdings and stuff like that. Disney is trying to acquire Fox's creative media and everything like that. Obviously, they can't buy the sports aspect because you can't control, like, two different, like, Fox Network, and then because Disney owns ABC, right? And so they couldn't do that. But they're trying to get, like, the movie division, which, of course, includes X-Men and Fantastic Four. And X-Men is actually, I want to say, these last 2 years has had their best, you know, two movies in Deadpool and Logan, which was freaking fantastic earlier this year. Like, one of the only Marvel movies, I would say, that, like, or Marvel property movies and stuff, that could, like, reasonably be expected to, like, get nominated for an Oscar. But then again, that character, you know, Hugh Jackman started playing it like 16 years ago or 17 years ago now, so it kind of, like, you know, makes sense that, of course, he's inhabited this character for, like, so long that, like, it took him, you know, a long time to kind of get to a movie, a role, whatever you want to call it, with that character to where he could, like, win an Oscar. But yeah, so that's in theory, I don't think it's progressed past the like discussion phase or anything like that. But it's definitely one of those things that Disney is actively trying to get them and everything. And that way they don't have to enter an agreement like they do with Sony, with Spider-Man and stuff like that. They could just own the characters and everything. And so that would be really cool, because Fantastic Four are definitely like the missing piece, you know, to the whole kind of universe and stuff, because nothing against the actors, nothing against the directors, but that last Fantastic Four movie was just garbage. Like, literally one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen. So,
yeah, if we can get Fantastic Four involved, because I was just trying to explain to Cassie, because the one comic books that I did grow up reading were Fantastic Four, and one, Strange is really his only counterpart, or I guess person of equal, is Doom. And if you've never read the comics, you don't realize how crazy Doom is, but how smart and powerful he is as well. And one thing that they've never been able to accomplish in those Fantastic Four movies is translating that into multiple stories. It's just the one time they bring in Doom, Doom leaves, it's over. If they could bring that in, they could hold off the second Infinity War for another 3 years and just develop the other stories within that. Because there's so many rivalries that come in. You have Thing and Hulk, and you have Doom and Strange once again. And you could also, if you bring in Wolverine going at Hulk, there's all these other angles that you could build off of for years. Because reading that original Logan storyline, the movie is definitely better than the comic, because the comic is so insane, but it involves Planet Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, it's one of those things that you can't, I don't know, it's, like, if it happens, like, because they've got Spider-Man, and then, in theory, the movies just get better, because if there's one thing you can say, like, yeah, there's like two or three Marvel movies coming out from Disney every single year, so maybe there's a little bit of overload, but they have yet to really make, like, a bad movie. Like, maybe their worst movie was the second Thor movie, like the Dark World, but it still was an okay movie. It wasn't bad. It wasn't, like, campy, and it wasn't stupid and everything. But, like, this most recent Thor movie, it actually is tied right now on Rotten Tomatoes for, like, the highest fresh score among Marvel films, like with the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I think. And so it's just definitely, going into upcoming Fox properties, I don't know if you've seen the trailer for the New Mutants movie, but they're, like, doing a horror thing. And, like, there's just so much you can do with all these comic book properties. And Marvel having access to everything, I mean, who doesn't want to see, at this point, like, if Marvel got Fox, who doesn't want to see Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man and Hugh Jackman as Wolverine going at each other on the screen? Like, who doesn't want to see that? And, like, Hulk going versus Wolverine. Like, that's a pretty big rivalry in the comic books, too.
On, like, the Spider-Man villain storylines, like, bringing the Juggernauts in and all of those.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah, like, there's just so far they could go with these stories, which makes it even crazier, because growing up, I was a hip-hop head. That's all I listened to. So it's weird now that when I grew up, all I heard was rock music on commercials or country music. And now seeing, watching the World Series and having ODB, Shimmy Shimmy Ya, in the background advertising for YouTube is a mind-blowing one. And then, too, now, it's comic books are taking over the movie industry, that critics are so salty that they just act like they're not good movies, which is insane, because they're fantastic, they're directed, they have great acting in it, and I'm sorry, like, every Marvel movie has been better than The English Patient. I could say that definitively, and that won an Oscar. So if that's what we're holding up as good movie making, then I don't care about good movie making.
No, I definitely, I agree completely with what you just said, because, at some point, like, obviously, you don't want to judge everything by the numbers and stuff like that, but when you've got, like, some of these Marvel movies, like, every single one is made, like, for, I think, over $500 million and stuff, right? And, like, just the numbers of sales and the number of people who are going to see these movies, like, you can't completely just shut down and say, like, oh, well, you know, most of the public doesn't know what they're doing. No, people don't go see movies because they're bad. People go see movies because they want to like them and because they're good. And people continue and go and see them multiple times because they think they're really good. You know, and so it's just one of those things that, like, you know, yeah, The English Patient, I guess, is a, it's an interesting one to bring up. But it's definitely, you know, it's a good movie. But I would say most of the Marvel movies are way more watchable, like, and rewatchable too. Like, I've seen The English Patient once, I think, and that came out, man, what, 10 plus years ago? And so it's just one of those things that, like, yeah, seen it, don't need to see it again. But, like, Marvel movies, yeah, I'll watch them over and over and over again, as many times as possible.
Yeah, one of the clearest signs that critics don't know what they're talking about is there is no value in these Oscar winners, that often they don't get purchased by TNT or HBO or FX, because nobody's like, you know what, I haven't seen that movie in about 12 years. I'm going to sit down and watch it again. Nope, one time was enough. I'm good.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, and so I guess the next episode, or that'll be two episodes from now. I don't even know what our schedule will be going forward. We still have to see with Christy as well. We could certainly discuss Star Wars. I will definitely be delayed on watching it, as I don't get off until after the Christmas holiday. But I will definitely be excited.
Yep, tickets for Thursday night. So I will give my review on one of the upcoming episodes.
Okay. And so I guess we've already been recording for an hour, so I don't think we should probably have these too long. I know we used to have like 3-hour episodes and such, but we're normally inebriated as well, and you could probably hear it in the voices. But the story that everybody wants to know is fantasy football. How did you do? How did you wish you did? And any thoughts in general?
Well, okay, a little bit of return to form this year, for the Skinny Dippers. Definitely, the season's not over. It's getting close to being over, but, it's definitely one of those things that, you know, I think I'm still first. I'm 10-2. Man, Alex Smith, though, went from being, like, you know, the number one quarterback, and, like, he's now in, like, the bottom half or something like that, so... It's definitely time to, you know, sorry, Alex Smith, you're a good guy. I like you as a person, but, you know, it's probably time to say goodbye, you know. So, but other than that, I mean, Kareem Hunt definitely did good. Mark Ingram, awesome. And then Le'Veon Bell, they're, like, keeping my team, like, upright. But that's what happens when you get the first pick, so...
This year was not good for Lemon Pepper Wet. I really didn't even pay attention. I think I might be done with fantasy football. Definitely done with having three teams. There's only one of the three that's destined to make the playoffs, and that's the Republic Football League, or the Boozers. And Lemon Pepper Wet there, or actually that team name is Free Drinks Next Week, is slowly climbing up. We're in the fourth spot, so, and really competitive. But the Geppetto's League, getting destroyed in, and I need to send in my $50 to pay the winner, as well as the other league, which is the Beer League, where we all name ourselves after a beer. I chose the refined, delectable taste of Michelob Ultra, and... It was a better year than last year, but I don't know. It's just taking up too much time. No, I lie. It's not really taking up too much time. I care about pro football a lot less than I used to. And
yeah,
and I won't say it's the controversy around it this year, though that probably contributes to it. I realize ever since I've stopped hanging out at the bars on Sundays and Sunday being the day for pro football, I've become less and less interested in it. That they have Thursday, they have Sunday, they have Monday, and then on Sunday they only have six games, but only one of them might be good. I'm just losing interest in the sport. but I enjoy playing in the competitive nature of it. I just hate spending so much money every year to lose. And that's on me.
Now, I know for sure college sports I'm definitely way more active with. It just comes with being a graduate of a university and stuff. Like, I've even gotten into basketball and, like, watched a Texas Tech bat. I think out of 7 games, I've seen 3 of them now, like, on TV and everything, like, gone out to watch those sports. But for sure, like, pro football, you know, I kind of for a couple of years just kind of like okay, yeah, I'll play fantasy, but, you know, didn't pay attention to it. But then as soon as it became about money, I'm like, well, I need to do this because I don't like to lose $50 essentially. So for sure, the goal is absolute destruction of everybody. But as I've learned, I've lost 2 games, one of them being to the evil traitor, Russell Moses, and everything. Blood traitor, as I call him, because he's now an Aggie and stuff. So, but yeah, in terms of watching, I don't think I've watched a single pro game this year except for Thanksgiving Day. Like, I watched all 3 of those games, but it's just because, you know, you're off, you're cooking, sitting at home doing that and stuff like that. So, and of course this year we did use the turkey bag once again, so awesome recommendation from a couple years ago, Chris.
Happy to hear that, and definitely tell your mother hello, because that is one fantastic woman, and I really enjoy having Thanksgiving dinner with all of y'all when we have the opportunity to do so. But yeah, even with the complete domination, part of not watching pro football is you miss out on what are the nuanced players, the players that come up every year. Because every year there's about 20 new players that can change the entire football league. And with the amount of injuries this year, I think that number's probably up to 30, since you have a lot of quarterbacks out, running backs, wide receivers. You have to go far down depth charts and have a general good knowledge of football to be able to pounce on those hidden gems prior to being it recommended by the NFL.com or Yahoo Fantasy. And so, like, this is my first year really playing fantasy basketball. It takes a lot more work or focus than fantasy football, but I feel like I at least know the players.
Ah, okay.
And speaking of football, how about the Texas Tech? What are your thoughts on the year as we have wrapped up the regular season?
Well, my projection was off by about 6 games, but I'm gonna say this. I've seen a lot of reactions over the last, you know, week and a half, roughly, since Thanksgiving ended and since Tech beat Texas. I said at the beginning of the year, if he beats UT, he's coming back next year. You know, it doesn't really matter, because he's one of 2 Texas Tech coaches to win twice in Austin and everything. Then, yeah, of course, it's not the UT of you know, former days and stuff, and, like, not as good as it used to be, essentially. But they've still got the same, like, elite players, like, as they used to have, essentially. But, I mean, I said that, so I'm not surprised he's coming back. I'm really excited about seeing year 4 of David Gibbs' defense, because clearly the defense was, like, the true, what do you say, like, surprise factor in everything this year. Like, that defense is not a garbage defense anymore. That's a good defense. And so that's really kind of amazing and awesome to say that at Texas Tech. And the games that we lost, like, you know, Kansas State, a touchdown, you know, West Virginia by a score, Oklahoma State by a score. Like, we could have really easily, like, with a decent Texas Tech offensive team and stuff, been like 10-2 or 9-3 this year easily. You know, Oklahoma, really the only game that we were kind of out of. Iowa State, we were never in that game, but who expects a Texas Tech offense at home to only score 7 points, too? That was just kind of silly, in my opinion. So, Yeah, I mean, I'm actually excited about the future. I think that we've got a really good shot of being a, you know, we're an average team right now, 6-6, like that's average to me. I think we have a good shot of being a better than average next year, maybe good the year after that. Just, it all starts with quarterback. We've got to get a good quarterback in, so.
I don't know. I'm disappointed in Kingsbury as he's hung his hat on so many years as being the offensive scion and being let down that when we lost, it just wasn't losing. It was losing on offense, that the defense did their job that they didn't do prior to it. So I hope that could move. And some of it, hopefully, since he's been there a couple years now, the maturity will start stepping through or start shining through. Because if anything, I feel like it's maturity is what lost us the opportunity of having some of these quarterbacks. Because when it comes down to it, he would have had at least 4 pro quarterbacks on campus during his time here. He barely missed Stidham, which would have made it 5. Sure, some of them leave because you want to start, and I completely understand that. But I feel like maturity could convince that player to stay to your senior year, and you're going to get the start. And and that didn't happen. The fact that there's probably the Heisman, the leading Heisman candidate, is someone that he was too immature to sign because he didn't like the guy's father. That's disappointing, but I'm hoping its maturity will keep us from that issue again. And now when he's recruiting and has an understanding, that will be reflected in the team and build some depth. Because it makes no sense to be this good of a quarterback coach and quarterback recruiter and have no one on the staff right now.
Yeah, I think what happened with Jet Duffy in the offseason, that set us back, obviously. And I think McLean Carter is an interesting quarterback, that guy who started the UT game, and maybe fits Kingsbury's offense a little bit better. But as I've understood, he's like also 19 years old or 20 years old, so he's super young. And like for this offense, you really have to be in it for a couple years. Like, but, and you know, he's not a bad person and everything, and I can totally get why Kingsbury was trying to stay loyal to him. But I think we can all agree that Chimenek is just not a good quarterback, you know. Like, or he's an average quarterback at best, right? Like, he's not gonna like set the world on fire. Was never gonna win a Heisman or anything like that. So,
yeah. If anything, Chimenek, maturity is what helped him win games this year. It wasn't quite the talent, because he's probably 24 years old, so he's just more mature than everybody else in that field, and he's a grown man playing against teenagers.
Yeah.
And he just didn't have that little extra. It's not his fault. He's the one who stuck through the program, give him the start, because he was the best person to have on campus this year with the cards that we had. But once again, I think that goes back to Kingsbury and preparation and focus. And now that Gibbs has shown that we're back to a top 80 defense, that's what historically we needed to win 9 to 10 games a year.
Yeah. And I think, and honestly, I think my kind of final thought on it is I trust Kingsbury to fix the offense way more than I trust a new coach to come in and completely revamp everything and be successful. So that's kind of the way I'm looking at it right now. So,
yeah, I just don't want a new person to come in to the office. Or I just don't want a new person because it's Lubbock, and I don't trust our AD to find the right coach. We're in this situation because of our campus leadership in AD, and he's not the one to find it. It's not as bad as the Tennessee situation, thank God. But that's only because we don't have boosters like Jimmy Haslam that could screw it up that bad. Because if we did, we would have. Because we definitely screwed it up. It's just not as bad as Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. You know, the state of the Texas Tech athletic program is really good right now. You look at basketball, like, yeah, I lost our first game to, but it was to a real opponent, like going into the, like Seton Hall is going to be in the bracket and everything. They're going to be in the NCAA. baseball, like going, competing every single year now and stuff. So I definitely think from that perspective, like, and I mean, you talk about some of the other sports, like, golf, both of our golf teams are like ranked, our tennis teams are ranked, you know, volleyball is actually getting better, surprisingly enough, and so it's one of those things that, like, athletic program is strong, but I think you're only ever rated on football, pretty much, right? And so, like, yeah, it looks bad just because the football team was a hot mess, essentially. So
still our biggest opportunity as any program, since I don't think we'll ever be back to Mike Leach era success in football, just due to TCU being in the Big 12, and that's where we used to recruit as TCU's base to get them on TV. Mm-hmm. In basketball, it's only 12 players, so it takes the investment on a whole is less. I feel like we should be investing in the basketball side of it. With Iowa State not dominating the way they used to, Kansas will always be good. UT will get better, and OU. But you have 64 slots to get in, to have a legitimate chance at winning a championship. In football, there's four. I think math just says you go the basketball route. There's less variables, as you don't have a team of 70 people. You have a team of, I think, 19 in college basketball. So it's less variables all the way around, and that's where we should be investing it, in basketball and baseball. You're right. It's not the glamour sport, and I know most Tech fans can't get behind that, but I think it would be better for the university overall.
You know, I definitely, like, so baseball, we're kind of already there. Like, we've won back-to-back Big 12 titles and stuff. And now it's just winning that national title. I want to say basketball, I'm trying to think. I'm going to say within the next 5 years, we're going to be first or second in the Big 12 title race and stuff in basketball, men's basketball at least. I think we're going to easily get into a bracket this year, get into the NCAA bracket and stuff for men's basketball. But probably is like an 8 or 9 seed, like, which is what we are. But I think that we're 5 years away from being in that, like, really good, like, 3 to 4 to 5 seed range. So, I mean, right now we're third in the Big 12, I think, right behind Kansas and Baylor. And, like, right now they're projecting, like, NCAA bracket as like a 9 or a 10 seed, I think, for Tech basketball. And I think we have a chance at easily improving that record too. So,
yeah, we're definitely making the tournament this year, so we'll see where we get at the end of it. We'll follow up next week with another update with college basketball. But we are an hour and a half. Is there anything we need to talk about that we might have missed? Oh, championship picks, is that?
Yeah, so the games today are, sorry, I was just actually pulling that up, Memphis versus UCF for the American Athletic Conference, TCU versus Oklahoma for the Big 12, Georgia versus Auburn for the SEC, Fresno versus Boise State for the Mountain West, and then Miami versus Clemson. So, oh, and Miami versus Clemson, and then Ohio State versus Wisconsin tonight. So my picks are, I'm going to say UCF because Charlie Strong, think he got done wrong at Texas and stuff. And clearly he's got an undefeated team in Florida right now, so go Charlie Strong. I think OU is going to win against TCU, even though I hate Baker Mayfield. I don't know. Georgia and Auburn, that's a tough pick for me, but I'm going to have to go with Georgia, I think, just because – I don't know. They had a little bit better wins, but I could care less about Fresno State and Boise State, but I'm going to say Boise State. probably Clemson over Miami, and then, unfortunately, Ohio State over Wisconsin.
Okay. I'm going to go with Wisconsin over Ohio State. I would like to see Wisconsin get in it, as well as Miami over Clemson. Boise State, of course, over Fresno. And Auburn over Georgia. And I want to see Baker Mayfield in the championship, just to kind of teach Texas Tech a lesson. And I wish that Charlie Strong was in the championship game. Maybe next year, University of South Florida will have a better chance. But I'll take Memphis, and because they just score so many points. But I could see Memphis versus UCF getting 70 points on the board tonight easily. Or midday. It's not even tonight. It'll be in a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's already started, actually. It's 17-14 UCF right now.
Oh, okay. So they're easily going to get to the 60-point mark.
Mm-hmm.
Easily for those two teams. But we'd like to thank everybody for joining. I would like to send a special shout-out to one of my favorite people that I met in Lubbock, Esquire. He is no longer Pre-Squire, and he now works for the United States government, joining the JAG Corps. Congratulations to your marriage, graduating law school, passing the bar exam, and joining the armed forces. That's really awesome. I would also, if you have any notes or recommendations, please link us on the Facebook page. Let us know how the sound quality is. This is the first time we haven't used a soundboard. I'm just using a headset. This is the first time I've done that route. And also, any topics or segments you like, segments you didn't, bring it up. We'd like to see you modify, and hopefully we can make this a regular thing again. Once again, Mike, it's great talking to you and having and doing the show again. It's really been missed, and used to build my week kind of around it, and that's been one thing missing as I changed careers and moved 700 miles away. But definitely, it's good to hang out.
Yeah, it's always good to talk to the people and be a voice of reason and a voice of hope in desperate times. So for sure, and looking forward to it. And I'll have more reports on new Lubbock openings and new kind of cool things in Lubbock next time.
All right. And this has been Free Drinks Next Week. Just remember, it's not free if you left your credit card at the bar.
Later.
All right. Speak to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.